John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, November 22, 2010. Today, a Palestinian worker was shot by Israeli police near the city of Ashkelon in the southern district of Israel. According to Israeli officials, he was working in Israel without permission, and he was shot while trying to run over another person with a car. The victim was not identified. In addition, Israeli police destroyed a Bedouin town of Al-Araqib in the southern Israel. The village was first demolished in late June, but the police had to come back six more times to destroy it after residents' resistance managed to build their homes. The construction of the barrier along Israel-Egypt border was also started today. The project will cost 1.35 billion shekels and intends to stop the transit of economic migrants, asylum seekers and drug smugglers, as well as possible terrorist incursions into Israel. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has defined the barrier as an obligation and right to protect the State of Israel. In the U.S., a new report made by the State Department documents a rise in religious violence and state-sponsored discrimination over the last year in Israel, specifically mentions right-wing Haredi Jewish group and their undue influence on the Israel government's policies. The report also outlines the discrimination against non-Jewish and women segregation among ultra-Orthodox communities. On Sunday, Israeli news sources reported that two soldiers who were convicted of using a Palestinian boy as a human shield during Israel's war on Gaza in 2008 only received a demotion and 3 months suspended sentence. On Saturday, just days after Israeli troops oversaw the bulldozing of Palestinian homes and farmland in Beit Umar village to make way for the expansion of an Israeli Jewish-only settlement, Palestinians, internationals and Israelis who protest about it were attacked by Israeli army who fired tear gas. Three Israelis, two internationals and one Palestinian were abducted. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today from International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Husam Kassis and Aneira Tabal.
Here's a report from last week's This Week in Palestine about the escalating fighting between Israel's occupation soldiers and the resistance fighters of Palestine, including more rockets.
In the Gaza Strip, Islamic Jihad fighters clashed with Israeli troops on Tuesday at dawn as the army attempted to enter in the Strip, Palestinian media sources reported. Israeli forces were reportedly forced to withdraw. On Wednesday, an Israeli airstrike in Gaza killed two brothers, named as Mohammed and Islam Yassin, who are believed to be leaders of the Army of Islam. The fundamentalist group Ansar al-Sana released a 30-second recording in Hebrew, vowing to avenge the death of the two fighters. Two mortar shells from Gaza landed on Thursday in the southern district of Israel. No injuries were caused. According to Palestinian medical sources, a resident was wounded by Israeli military fire near Beit Lahia, after a resistance group fired an RPG shell at an army jeep in northern Gaza. The attack reportedly comes in retaliation to recent Israeli attacks and the killing of the two brothers on Wednesday. Long-range Grad rocket was fired from Gaza into western Negev early on Friday without causing casualties. Also, Man News has reported on Friday that further Israeli airstrikes hit Gaza in the locations of Khan Yunis and Deir el-Balah. Six people were injured. The airstrikes come in retaliation to the ongoing exchanges between armed Gaza factions and the Israeli military over the last few weeks, and after the killing of three top militant leaders by Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. For IMMC.org, this is Alessandro Baggio.
After several months of stalled peace negotiations between the Israelis and Palestinians, the Obama administration is hoping to broker a deal for a 90-day construction freeze, temporarily halting Israel's expansion of West Bank settlements. This would exclude East Jerusalem, and the U.S. is reportedly offering Israel concessions, including a pledge not to seek any further construction freezes, the sale of 20 advanced U.S. fighter jets, acceptance of Israeli forces in the Jordan Valley, and a commitment to oppose international efforts to impose a political solution on Israel. Direct talks between Israelis and Palestinians broke off after a previous settlement freeze expired on September 26th. While Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces opposition to extending the freeze from many in his right-wing cabinet, Palestinians are asking why Israel should receive incentives from the U.S. for stopping settlement expansion, which is in violation of international law. One of the proposed solutions to the dispute over Israeli settlements is to cede to the Palestinians land inside Israel in exchange for the existing settlements within the West Bank. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Osama Khalil, co-director of the group Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network, who talks about why he believes new Middle East peace talks will fail if Washington refuses to pressure Israel to make substantive concessions to comply with international law.
This is a one-time-only 90-day freeze. And according to the press reports, I mean, some of this is still a bit vague, but according to the press reports, what we're seeing is a real diminishing of Palestinian rights, not only territorially, but within international organizations, including the UN. And what do I mean by that? According to some of the press reports, what's being reported is that the United States would support, in return for a 60 to 90-day freeze on settlements, which, again, does not include East Jerusalem, which compromises about half the number of settlements and settlers. Among the reported concessions by the Obama administration was control to Israel over the Jordan River Valley for some unspecified set of time. One assumes it would be something like a 99-year lease. So this is a huge chunk of territory bordering between Jordan and what would be a Palestinian state, which would be controlled by the Israeli military. So what does that mean? In reality, that means that Israel will control the borders of this Palestinian state, so that the key fundamental component of sovereignty for any state is the control of your borders, who comes in, who comes out, how much freedom of access of people, of trade, etc. Israel will control this. At a second level, the fact that it is now blocking and has agreed to block any attempt by the Palestinians at the UN or other international bodies to obtain recognition for an independent state without a final peace agreement is another huge blow to Palestinian efforts, again, to negotiate not only a peace, but to achieve an independent state that fulfills the basic and fundamental rights of everyone on this planet, which is the right to freedom and to live in dignity. And that is actually being denied, and it's being actively denied, not only by the Obama administration, but, of course, other American administrations. So this isn't much of a difference. It's not going to lead to much. And, in fact, what it's only going to do is further entrench Israel's occupation and further weaken the hands of Palestinians in this moderate Palestinian leadership that supposedly the Obama administration is attempting to support and to promote in the region.
I wanted to ask you about the prospects that Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian government, what's the likelihood that he'll move forward with these talks under pressure from the United States and other Arab governments, in the thinking that among some diplomats, some agreement at this point is better than no agreement at all?
Well, unfortunately for Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, they have nowhere else to go. They have situated themselves in such a hole at this point in terms of their utter reliance on both the United States and Israel, both for money, military support, and by military support, I mean the training and arming of their security services. And this is the security service that keeps this small government in power. Because of that, and because they have a very minimal, at this point, popular base of support, they really don't have anywhere else to go. As part of these negotiations between Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, it was also reported that another $150 million was delivered to the Palestinian Authority. It's, of course, not a huge amount of money in comparison to what's being given to the Israelis, but the Palestinian Authority, based in Ramallah, of course, it's important to separate Abbas's government and the West Bank between and Hamas government in Gaza. The Abbas government receives an enormous amount of money from the U.S. in the attempt to build it up in opposition to Hamas. The key here is that Abbas is not only under pressure from Israel and the United States, but, of course, the Arab League, and he's been going to the Arab League to get some kind of support to help push the Israelis, and pushing the Israelis, meaning pushing the United States to push the Israelis to offer some concessions at the peace table. It's likely that Abbas will return to the peace talks. It's highly unlikely the peace talks will lead to anything, particularly since the 90-day, quote-unquote, moratorium on settlement building does not include East Jerusalem. So Abbas is in a tough spot, but it's a spot that he has put himself in and that the Palestinian Authority has put itself in vis-a-vis its attempts at negotiating with the Israelis through the deeply flawed Oslo Accords, which did very little but ensure the continual occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
Osama Khalil, if you were to prescribe a path forward for viable peace talks that would provide the Palestinians sovereignty in their own future state, overcoming a lot of political opposition to pressuring Israel, is there a way forward?
The only way to achieve this is, of course, by recognizing that apartheid in Israel exists and that apartheid anywhere is unacceptable. And so moving toward a strategy of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and putting pressure on the politicians, as was done in South Africa, not waiting for the politicians. And for those of your listeners who remember Ronald Reagan's strategy of constructive engagement, which was neither constructive nor engaging, that the reality is by putting pressure on the politicians and the diplomats is really the only way that the dam will be broken here. And that real peace, a just peace, can be achieved, whether it be in Israel, Palestine, or anywhere else in the world. By sitting back and waiting for ineffectual politicians to finally stand up for what's right, it's a little bit like waiting for Godot.
That was Osama Khalil, co-director of the group Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network. For more information, visit the group's website at alshabaka.org.
Iraq. Yesterday, a U.S. soldier was killed by small arms fire in northern Iraq.
Joint Base Ballard, Iraq,
Friday, multinational force Iraq, meaning the U.S. military reports the death of a United States Forces Iraq soldier during physical training. Iraq, last Friday, an alleged suicide bomber from Sweden was killed by security forces. Iraq, Shirkat, Saladin province, yesterday, a bomb landed in a cop's house, killed a woman and wounded a child. The cop was not home. Another bomb was found attached to an army officer's car. Iraq, last Wednesday, 30 prisoners escaped from the northern Baghdad's Tazfurt prison following a battle with the prison guards, according to a security force in Baghdad. Georgia, upcoming. More than 200 soldiers in the Georgia Army National Guard are prepared for a year-long deployment that will take them to Iraq. They are scheduled for deployment to Taji, Iraq, which is about 20 miles north of Baghdad. Wait a minute. Weren't U.S. troops supposed to be withdrawing from Iraq? Whatever happened to 1 week and a month, anyway? Washington, D.C., Saturday. The U.S. is now saying that 2014, not 2011, will be the planned end of major combat operations in Afghanistan. Haven't we heard that one before? Afghanistan, today, NATO is reporting the deaths of two occupation soldiers from an IED attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday, NATO is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from a non-combat related injury in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Kunduz, Afghanistan, today, three German soldiers were wounded when their convoy was bombed in the northern province of Kunduz, a police official reported. Afghanistan, ongoing. The United States is introducing tanks into the war for the first time since 2001. Quote, the tanks bring awe, shock, and firepower. The Washington Post quoted a senior U.S. officer based in Afghanistan as saying, shock and awe? Wasn't that supposed to end the war in Iraq all the way back in 2003? Islamabad, Pakistan, today. Pakistan is expected to delay a full-blown military offensive in the North Waziristan tribal region by another 4 to 6 months, contrary to the expectations of the Pentagon, according to a report in the Express Tribune. Apparently, the current Pakistani war against the Taliban is going so poorly, they are leery of opening a second front in the war. Pakistan, Saturday. The Pakistani government has refused U.S. demands to widen the area in which the U.S. is allowed to bomb and kill from its drones, exercising their sovereignty against U.S. aggression and murder. Pakistan, Saturday. An estimated 10 NATO fuel tanker trucks were burned by insurgents in northwest Pakistan on the outskirts of Peshawar on the border with Afghanistan. London, Saturday. Thousands of people marched to demand an end to the war in Afghanistan and the withdrawal of all British troops. Mr. Barack Obama, all this sounds an awful lot like back in 2007 when George Bush rammed the surge through over your party's supposed objection. Think it will go better this time? If not, now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
Had The months of political gridlock in Iraq did not stop Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki from opening up oil fields in southern Iraq to foreign oil companies. Meanwhile, the Iraqi government has continued its repression against trade unions that are harsh critics of the effort to privatize the country's rich oil sector. Since the 2003 invasion, oil workers' unions have battled U.S. and Iraqi officials over granting millions of dollars worth of oil leases to foreign companies. In 2007, oil workers in Iraq shut down oil pipelines in protest over high unemployment and the effort to privatize oil resources. According to The Nation magazine, Prime Minister Maliki called in the Iraqi army with U.S. fighter protection to harass oil workers. In recent years, the oil workers have blasted the use of production sharing agreements between the government and foreign companies. These deals are rare in Arab countries because too much power and revenue is given away to oil firms from Europe, the United States, Russia, and China. Other Iraqi trade unions have suffered harassment from the Maliki government. Last July, electric utility workers were expelled from their office in Basra as billions of dollars in power plant contracts went out for bids. General Electric won over $3 billion in Iraqi infrastructure deals.
Suppose army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. A key reason the Democrats did so poorly in the recent elections was they were widely seen as having betrayed their base. Here's what the Black is Back Coalition had to say about Obama, the war, the bank bailouts, and the police as they marched on the White House on the 13th of November.
No more police!
Occupy
ghetto streets!
No more U.S.
Marines!
Occupy Middle East!
Now there it is, a very explicit comparison of the occupation of neighborhoods of color by the police and gentrifiers to the occupation of the Middle East by the U.S. military. In another vein, one speaker at the rally after Black is Back marched to the White House pointed out that when in Philadelphia, a young activist asked Obama, quote, "What about the black community?" He was physically brutalized by police, and then criminal charges were filed against him just for asking a question. Here is an analysis of his question, "What about the black community?"
Our people, what about the black community? What about the black community? While the banks are being bailed out by the Obama administration, our people are being kicked out of their homes, kicked out of their apartments. They don't have any place to live. People are homeless. The homeless shelters are bursting. People are losing their homes to biggest piece of wealth that a black family has, if they have it, is home ownership. And more black people have lost their houses in the last 2 years than since slavery. In the last 2 years, if they got a trillion or 14 trillion to bail out the banks, they got 14 trillion for decent housing for our people and communities all over this country.
Still wonder why younger voters and African Americans didn't turn out in huge numbers to vote for a bunch of Democrats again?
They're showing you every day in 1,001 ways that this is their system. But I'm not a mule, I'm not a donkey, I'm not a tool, I'm a human being, and I'm gonna fight for the rights that we have as human beings, brothers and sisters. We're not gonna sit passively by and let this happen. We didn't come this far. We worked too hard. We want our children to have a better life than we have. Isn't that why we live? We live for our children, so that our children can have a better world than we had. But what we're doing, we're looking around today and we're seeing that our children are gonna have a harder time than we have. Why should any black, Latino, or even poor white youth, why should anybody have to die on the battlefield of Afghanistan just to get a scholarship to go to college? There's enough money in this country to provide a free college education for every student in this country. Why should parents have to mortgage their home two times, three times, just to get their children through college?
I don't know about you, but given the fact that the Obama surge of 2008 was not repeated in the 2010 election, I have a feeling that the discontent that black is back is tapping into is shared by a lot of people. I ain't talking about teabaggers here or anybody else dumb enough to vote for a Republican. I'm talking about people who live in our communities and are sick to death of the lies and false promises that we've been getting from Democrats and Republicans alike.
On the 18th of November, D.C. officials held a public hearing on declaring Franklin School, home of the former Franklin Shelter for the Homeless, surplus so it can be sold to a developer. Didn't go quite as they planned.
Council Chair Vince McGray, now Mayor-elect, wrote a letter to the mayor, Fenty, about the closure of the shelter, about his grave concern about steps taken to reduce capacity and whatnot, and barring new admissions. On September 16th of 08, the council had hearings and passed the Franklin Shelter closing requirements after 2008. The mayor, we contend, has never complied with that. There are lawsuits now pending in court, and are now in the Court of Appeals in the local court as well as the federal court about the legality of closing the shelter. So despite the fact that this act was passed, the mayor hurriedly closed it on September 26th of 2008. And I was there that morning. It was pouring rain. They threw the guys' stuff either in trucks or in garbage dumps. They threw the guys out in the rain. There were people with mental illness walking the streets crying all weekend. And they told them they had to go to Anacostia, okay? Since then, Lacoste's been closed. It was closed on October 15th. And there are people sleeping all over Morgan.
Be sure, because they're not listening or you care. The very fact that all these people have come here and said that there is a need for a shelter, for a school, for a detox clinic, for a healthcare clinic, the list goes on, means by your very definition of surplus, it does not meet that. It means, for your definition of surplus, 10801 says there is no further public use. There's been a clearly defined public use. There's a very clearly defined public need. It's not surplus.
Not surprisingly, a wealthy suit-wearing yuppie from a condo building at 1155 K Street showed up to say he hated the homeless, he hated the shelter, and he was glad Franklin Shelter was closed and supported Mayor Fenney and Jack Evans. This is no surprise from some of these condo owners.
I own and live in a condominium at 1150 K Street Northwest. My wife and I moved from Northern Virginia to the district with the hope of improving our quality of life by taking part in the great urban renaissance that is sweeping America.
Now that's an interesting choice of words. Quality of life was what Rudy Giuliani used as his excuse in New York for arresting people in the most trifling of offenses, and was used in San Francisco to justify attempts to criminalize sitting or lying down on the sidewalk.
In regard to the Franklin School, we supported Mayor Fenty and Councilman Evans in closing the shelter.
So economic development is giving Donatelli $8.6 million in tax abatement because he couldn't make the George Avenue Petworth building's condos only apartments. Many of the people who lived in Franklin's shelter were working men.
That's right.
Not, they weren't drug addicts, and I resent the man who may live near there. He came from Virginia. We here in D.C. were already here when he got here.
Ooh.
And to smear men who lived in Franklin's shelter as if the majority of them were drug dealers is ridiculous.
The economic argument goes, arguing that it costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 million rent to pay the building, and the city shouldn't do that. I'd like to ask them why the city spent $50 million as a gift to the Verizon Center to renovate their TV. So this is how much served also other purposes besides schools being turned over to developers, only for them to leave the buildings vacant for years. I've heard the complaint from some people, you know, that it's a problem for the buildings to be vacant, yet they've been turned over to private hands, and that happens as well. So I don't think the answer is, well, if the city is going to keep the building boarded up, you know, it should be turned over to private hands, because that's what's going to happen with private hands as well. If you take the Randall School, located at Half Street and I Street Southwest, it was turned over to the Corcoran Gallery of Art in 2004. It was serving as a men's shelter at the time. The city gave it to them for the third of the assessed value. It was assessed at $20 million. They gave it to them for $6.2 million.
I was part of the original Mayday DC crew that seized Franklin School back in 2002 and got it open as a shelter. My role was logistics, scouting, and intelligence. In 2003, when the shelter was closed at the request of the McDonald's that had newly been rebuilt at 13th and New York Avenue, we occupied the building again. The building was reopened. The Great Panthers bottom line, the occupation, they didn't dare arrest anybody. How can you guarantee to any potential buyer of this building that it doesn't get occupied again? We're still here. The need for housing is still here. A lot of people's lives were saved when Franklin became a shelter. People are dying in the streets now that the shelter is closed. So there is no way, shape, or form that this is a building with no public use, because people are dying since it's been emptied. Lastly, if this building is turned into a luxury hotel, there is nothing anybody can say or do that would guarantee that somebody doesn't buy themselves a bag of bed bugs from a laboratory supplier, rent themselves a cheap suit, and rent themselves a room in a hotel. And then you got people outside with signs saying, I'm homeless. I used to sleep in this building. It used to be a homeless shelter. And guess what? It's still got the bed bugs. Yeah, it didn't have bed bugs when it was a homeless shelter, but that don't mean it ain't going to have bed bugs when it's a luxury hotel. Mayday DC, we stood for action, not words. Direct action was the motto for dealing with this city's housing crisis. And based on what I'm seeing here, it looks like that's going to be necessary again.
Let Mr. Gray know that if you see them tear down, you know, going through this whole process of shoveling that dirt to tear down the Franklin School and turn it into a luxury hotel, that is going to be the beginning of the end of the administration of Vincent Gray. Thank you.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor. Cows, they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
On the 7th of November, the American College of Toxicology met at the Baltimore Marriott Waterfront Hotel. At this convention were a number of animal research firms, including Puppy Killing, Huntington Life Sciences, where undercover investigations have caught so-called researchers punching beagle puppies in the face dissecting live monkeys with no painkillers. Oblivion of phone calls forced the hotel to agree never to host this convention again, but they refused to cancel, so animal rights protesters showed up outside.
Once again, we are here for the Marriott Hotel because Marriott is hosting the American College of Toxicology. The American College of Toxicology brings corporates, brings together horrible vivisection leaders such as Huntington Life Sciences, Covance, and Charles River Laboratories. The Marriott has been made well aware of why we are here. The Marriott has been getting phone calls all this week with concerned citizens asking them nicely to cancel their contract with the American College of Toxicology. The Marriott and Ed Rosinsky has stated and has agreed to not host the American College of Toxicology again next year. Marriott and Ed Rosinsky, we're going to hold you accountable for this and check back. Keep on checking back and making sure that you don't let these monsters inside your hotel again. HLS! HLS!
At first, protesters used powerful bullhorns in front of the hotel, but Baltimore cops threatened to arrest them for sound equipment, even though there is no law prohibiting its use, and even tried to intimidate protesters out of recording this exchange.
Oh, that line. Because we've heard that before, and I checked. I called various agencies, I called various services, and couldn't find those laws on the phone.
Yeah, you can't use the amplifiers. You can stand here and do it. You can stand here and do your
law.
I don't know. Go get it in writing and bring it back to me, and then we'll talk about it, okay?
Ma'am,
first of all, I'm not giving you permission to tape me or take my picture, okay?
It's legal to tape police officers in a public spot.
Ma'am, I told you, I'm not giving you permission to tape me, okay?
You hear me asking for permission, you stupid cop?
This is a public area. You can't deny permission in a public area. If you don't want to be filmed in a public area, then you can't come to public areas.
To do your thing here, but you cannot use the amplifiers.
What?
You cannot use the amplifiers, okay? And that's it.
What's the law then?
Disorderly conduct. People pay to come here to sleep, okay? To sleep. This is a hotel.
Alright?
Doesn't matter if it's 2 p.m. or 2 a.m. If they pay to sleep, that's what they're here to do. If you want to do your demonstration, that's fine, but you cannot use the horns to do it.
That's the bottom line. This is for zoning now. Zoned as a business area, and so.
Well, they don't have a law. Like, you'd ask us to bring a law because he says we're violating a law.
All those threats didn't work. You just heard those cops right here. The protests went on for at least a half hour after that confrontation. In the Baltimore Marriott Waterfront Hotel, for the American College of Toxicology, and for Huntington Life Sciences, there's no sleep for the wicked.
Hydraulic fracturing or fracking, a relatively new way to access natural gas locked in shale formations located deep underground, has led to increased drilling in many states around the country. One area is the Marcellus Shale Formation in Pennsylvania, which extends to most of West Virginia and parts of New York State near New York City. One gas company executive claimed on a recent 60 Minutes segment that the U.S. holds in natural gas deposits the equivalent of two Saudi Arabias worth of oil. Natural gas is considered by many a bridge fuel to cleaner energy because it emits much less carbon dioxide than coal or oil. But the process of fracking, in which millions of gallons of water, a secret mix of toxic chemicals, and sand are injected into wells to break apart shale and release trapped gas, is raising pollution concerns throughout the U.S. The drilling method has polluted groundwater, created contaminated industrial sites in some rural areas, and caused illnesses, according to people who live near fracking operations. New York State has declared a short-term moratorium on fracking in the Delaware watershed, which provides drinking water to New York City. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Allison Fisher, Director of Outreach for Public Citizens Energy Program. She explains why some environmentalists favor the development of natural gas resources, but cautions that fracking should be halted, at least until the results of an Environmental Protection Agency study are released.
The best case scenario for a lot of people, certainly for environmentalists, is this idea of natural gas. So I think it's kind of a false dichotomy that's been set up. You know, and I think its abundance is very appealing. The fact that it's domestic is very appealing. But you have to remember that we still have, you know, sun, and we have wind, and we have some other resources that are domestic as well. And they don't come with the trappings of all of the environmental and safety issues that natural gas does. And certainly natural gas that's coming to us from hydraulic fracking.
I know people in Pennsylvania and maybe other states are finding that their wells are contaminated with chemicals used in fracking, but the whole issue of water use in the process, talk about that. It takes a tremendous amount of water, right?
It is a tremendous amount of water. My understanding of that is something to the tune of either 1 to 5 million gallons per well. And those wells are drilled or extracted from sometimes multiple times, so that escalates the amount of water that's used. So, you know, and it's an interesting question that's posed because, you know, I think that there's this fallback that says, well, you know, if we tighten up the standards, the environmental standards, the safety standards, and we increase the accountability of this industry, then maybe this is an acceptable technology. But what's problematic about that is that these companies, this industry, is already off and running. This is not a question that we're posing at the beginning of potentially pursuing this technology. This is happening. It's been happening, and it's starting to increase in a very alarming way, particularly over the Marcellus Shale and on the East Coast, where they've really started to tap into some of these resources, you know, in communities that are not familiar with this technology at all and that see an opportunity to support their families by, you know, selling their land, their mineral rights to industries that are basically telling them that there's going to be no consequence.
Allison Fisher, do property owners sell the land and move away or just sell the mineral rights and stay put?
It gets very complicated because there is no federal regulation. So the regulations that are overseeing this technology is state by state. So having this patchwork that has to happen from a regulatory standpoint across all of these states is very complicated. And the kind of antidote to that is having, you know, federal regulations. And right now, hydraulic fracking is exempt from, my understanding, not just from Safe Water Drinking Act, but the Clean Air Act as well, and of course the National Environmental Policy Act. You know, not having them monitored or overseen this industry in any way is very problematic.
Is that the Halliburton loophole? The one that was included in the 2005 Federal Energy Bill when Vice President Dick Cheney, who's the former Halliburton CEO, was in office?
The Halliburton loophole is in reference specifically to the Safe Water Drinking Act, which basically means they're exempt from that. And this is where this idea of the chemicals that they're using, that they don't have to disclose them. You know, that's been just one of the regulatory gaps that needs to be filled in, and there's others. But right now, it seems that the big issue that's on the radar is, what are these chemicals? What are they using? What are they pumping into the earth, and what's coming back out by way of the flow water? What's happening right now is that the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has initiated a new study to look at hydraulic fracking, to look at the chemicals, to look at the impacts, and create a broader study about what hydraulic fracking is and what it's going to mean for the industry and for the country moving forward. One of the things that they are focusing on is the chemicals, the fracking fluid, it's called. And historically, companies have claimed proprietary information, saying that this is a special company recipe that if we divulge, then this could hurt our profits. This could make us less competitive if we're to let the ingredients out of the bag. So they've been able to claim that to keep them from having to divulge this information, information that the public needs, information that workers should have access to, and regulators and anybody overseeing this industry. The EPA study, which got initiated, I believe in February of this year, is not due to be released or completed until 2012. So it would stand to reason that while we're asking all these questions and have very few answers, that there shouldn't be any drilling going on. There should be a nationwide moratorium stopping this technology and these processes until, at minimum, until we get the EPA report that seeks to address a lot of the questions that are on the table.
That was Allison Fisher of Public Citizens Energy Program. Contact their D.C. office at area code 202-546-4996 or visit their website at citizen.org.